conference record has joined the conference.
All right, I got you, Joel.
Yep, I'm here.
Cool. All right, good afternoon, guys. My name is Elliot Ingebretson of The Great Slab, and today I'm here with the keyboard wizard himself, Mr. Joel Cummins of Umphrey's McGee. Joel, how are you doing today, my man?
I'm doing great. How are you, Elliot?
I can't complain, can't complain. So I wanted to start off by talking about you guys' latest release, The London Sessions, which was recorded at Abbey Road, the legendary Studio 2. You guys had 12 hours in the iconic studio to lay down a bunch of original material, some acoustic tracks, and the first ever cover to make it onto a studio album. So to walk me through the recording process of this new album and what it was like recording in one of the most legendary studios in the world.
Well, we came up with the idea kind of as a result of a little joke between our producer, Manny Sanchez, and one of our managers, Kevin Browning. We had announced shows in London, and Manny wrote Kevin and said, okay, how am I going to be able to get over to London to do this with you guys, maybe do a session at Abbey Road? And Kevin, of course, his interest being piqued, decided to reach out to Abbey Road and see what their deal was. And much like when you play a concert venue, you get a hold for a certain day, and I think we were we were third in line at that point. So we were able to clear the holds and get the dates. And we really went into it. We had four tunes that we definitely wanted to record, which was Bad Friday and Come Later, a couple of the newer ones, and then some acoustic versions of No Diablo and Cut the Cable, which appeared on Similar Skin, our album from last year. And aside from that, we didn't really have any objective or goal about what we wanted to do with it. We just wanted to go in and see what happened. And so, you know, we got a few different versions of those four songs that I mentioned, and then decided, okay, well, we've got all this time here. Let's just see how much we can get done. And tried to pick some things that we were a little more comfortable with, you know, just playing live and doing live versions of those. And we blew right through them and you know, got all these pretty much just one take of most of the other songs down. And then, you know, when we had about 20 minutes left in the session at the end of the day, we said, what do we want to do with it? And, you know, Jake mentioned the last tune that the Beatles cut at Abbey Road was I Want You, She's So Heavy. And we thought, okay, well, we know that one pretty decently, so let's see if we can get a good take of it. And that's how that ended up on there. So it was really just, you know, very, very spur of the moment. And there was, you know, I think that kind of helped add to the that spirit of spontaneity and maybe made it a little bit closer to what our typical live show is like than most of our other previous studio recordings. So, you know, there was just an incredibly special energy being able to perform in Studio 2, unlike any other recording environment I think we've ever been in before. You know, it's a very taxing process of taking 12 hours and dedicating that to recording because everybody is putting their, you know, their highest energy into it and really trying to do version after version of, you know, is this the best we can possibly do? And, you know, usually there's this kind of lull that happens between takes where, you know, everybody kind of zones out for a minute. And it was funny because that definitely did not happen at Abbey Road. You know, it might happen for a couple seconds and then you would pinch yourself and be like, oh yeah, we're at Abbey Road. That's right. So, it was a really fun celebratory day for us as a band, just that, you know, that we were actually there getting to do this. And, you know, we really didn't know, like I said, we didn't have a goal to put out an album when we did it, so we weren't really sure what was going to happen with this stuff, but after reviewing everything and seeing what we had, you know, we kind of realized, wow, we have enough that we can put out a full recording of this. Right. So then the next part of the equation was we didn't want to tell anybody about it, and we wanted to kind of make it a surprise. And somehow, you know, in this day and age in the 21st century, we were able to make that happen. And, you know, we didn't announce that we'd even done it until like mid-February of this year. So I think that really kind of added another fun little angle to it when fans woke up that day and saw that we have a new album coming out that we recorded at Abbey Road. That was pretty fun.
Right. Well, I got to say, it turned out great. So coming up next, you guys have the inaugural Umbowl, something you guys have been doing annually since 2010. You guys play four quarters full of improv, covers, and fan selections. Tell me a little bit about how Umbowl came to be and how it differs from your normal approach to live shows.
Well, you know, probably the beginnings of Umbowl happened when we were coming up with the S2 idea, which is, of course, one of the quarters of Umbowl. The S2 being this kind of experimental, improvisational-based thing where a group of fans would be texting in various ideas about, you know, things that we could play, I mean, in a very abstract way, you know. So we did a number of these S2 events, I would say probably between 2009 and 2011 in particular. And I think our first Umbowl was actually in 2010. So they may have overlapped a little bit. But the idea was definitely hatched there where, you know, what can we do that would be a really fun, fan interactive sort of thing where we could give the fans an opportunity to really be active contributors to what is happening in the show. And so, you know, we try to come up with a few different things that they could that we thought they could participate in, and try to kind of space it out so that some of the things would be things that would be prepared in advance, and some of the things would be ideas that would be happening live, right? You know, kind of right before our eyes, much like the S2. So you know, that was kind of the germination of it, and just really wanting to have something where it would be a completely unique thing, and the fans could participate in the creative process. So you know, it's taken some various shapes and forms over the years, but I believe the last couple we've done almost the exact same setup. As far as the division of the quarters and things like that. And, you know, it's been something that I think the fans just really enjoy. And now that we've been able to move it around a little bit, we've started it in Chicago. And then the last couple years have been, last year was in, outside of New York City at the Capitol Theater there, which is, a favorite venue for many of our fans. And, this year, of course, at the Brooklyn Bowl in Las Vegas. So, it's been fun to kind of take it around and, you know, get out of our comfort zones of where we might do something like that. And, you know, thankfully the fans felt the same way. And, this year will be our biggest Umbowl event we've done. So, a little over, I think we're right around 1400 people that are going to be there this year. So that's a very exciting thing that it's something that has developed into a fan favorite idea.
Right. Well, we're looking forward to see what you guys have up your sleeve in Las Vegas this upcoming weekend. Now, you guys are just coming off, you know, a monumental run at First Avenue in Minneapolis. You want to just tell me a little bit about, you know, your most recent three night run and what it was like playing the three sold out nights at the legendary Purple Rain Club.
Yeah, you know, anytime we get to set up shop for three nights in a row, it really kind of makes it relaxed for both the band and the fans because, you know, you just have to wake up and essentially do it again the next day. So First Avenue is, of course, a place that we've been playing now for many, many years. And, you know, we've done multiple night stands there before. But for whatever reason, this one felt a little more like a homecoming, I guess, because we've taken a few years off from doing it as consistently. So, yeah, it felt incredibly special to to be there, and it's such a great rock club. You know, there's a reason why it's been open for 40 years, and that, you know, that our fans still like to go there. So I think that, for us, it felt great to be up there because it was very comfortable, and it was just nice to know that, you know, we were all there and the crew didn't have to load out after the show and the fans didn't have to go far. So it's in a perfect place right downtown Minneapolis where there's a lot of easy access to hotels and things like that. So all those factors, I think, added up to making it a really exciting weekend for us.
Right. Well, it was definitely a memorable weekend, one that the Minneapolis fans won't forget for quite some time. Switching
awesome.
Gears a little bit here. You guys just started up a new record label, Nothing Too Fancy Records. What can you tell us about, you know, what the future holds for that label and just kind of the idea behind starting, you know, your own record label?
Yeah, well, the main idea behind starting our own record label was just that, you know, we've worked with a number of different labels now. Right over here. We've worked with a number of different labels now, and you know, we've had some really good experiences with them, but we also kind of know what we're doing now at this point, and just wanted to have more of those creative decisions under our own element, and mm-hmm. You know, really just wanted to have our own thing where we could release anything that we wanted to whenever we wanted to. And you know, this is about Humphreys McGee. This isn't really about us signing other bands and putting out their music. So it's really for us and the fans. And I think it's been a lot of hard work to do things right and to get it right. But at the same time, I think the fans have really embraced it because, you know, they see that, okay, we're giving the band money for their recorded music, and it's not just going to, you know, some record label that we don't really have any allegiance mm-hmm. to. This is going right to them. So in a way, I feel like it's helped connect our fan base to our recorded music a little more than we've ever been in the past. And the fact that, you know, Similar Skin debuted at 49 on the Billboard Top 200, and you know, and that the London session was so eagerly embraced by the fans, I'd say it's working out really well for us so far.
Right on, man. Right on. I wanted to talk a little bit about, and I've heard you talk about this on Twitter, and I think it's actually really interesting, about how, you know, the set lists vary from night to night and who is behind writing them. Do you guys kind of switch
uh-huh.
off, like, who writes the set list from night to night, or is it more of a group collab? And are there, like, themes? Are you like, tonight we're going to go just heavy as hell, or tonight it's going to be funk? Like, what is the mindset behind the night-to-night set list writing?
Well, I think, first of all, every one of us, you know, one of the things that I think people really love about the live shows the most is the variety and the diversity that, you know, we may be doing something really heavy like a Wizard Burial Ground, and then, you know, minutes later, we're doing Nothing Too Fancy, which is, you know, kind of this up-tempo, four on the floor, a bluegrass hybrid sort of thing. So so I don't think that there's really a conscious decision to go and say, like, okay, we're going to make this show really heavy. We're going to make this show more of a dancey show. You know, maybe once in a while, if it's, you know, if it's something where it's like, okay, we're playing a midnight to 3 a.m. set, you're not going to see one of our slower tunes like Rocker One in there, you know? So, you know, those are really kind of the only decisions. As far as the stylistic stuff, I think we're all always trying to be creative and to come up with a good flow, where things make sense, but that there's also variety. And that's something that, you know, we know our fans really like that too. So, you know, as far as the different people in the band doing it, it's really whoever's just kind of feeling it. And there'll be some days where, you know, for instance, somebody has relatives or, you know, a wife in town or something, and they're like, hey, you know, you do the service today. I'm going to go have lunch with my wife.
Right.
It's really, like, simple things like that. It's not, you know, yeah. It's not like, okay, you have today, I've got tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it seems like it really works itself out. There's certainly times when we're collaborating with each other, too. So I think that's another important thing that, you know, it's not just one person doing it. But one of the things that we've done now for the past couple of years is I'll go through. We have a website called allthingsumphreys.com, and our friends Adam Scheinberg and Scott Marks created this for us. They're the guys who made a very similar website like this for Phish, where, you know, fans can go in and find out their show stats and things like this. But the other really important purpose of it is that we use it to help create set lists. And so what we'll do is go back through, for instance, in Minneapolis, and I would make a list of the past 3 years of shows that we've done in the Minneapolis area. So for this time, it was, I think, a couple shows at Somerset Festival. We played outside at the Caboose, and I believe there was a First Avenue show on there. And then we'll run the stats on that and see, you know, okay, what songs have we played more than once? What songs have we not played at all in the Minneapolis area in the past 3 years? And then really use that as a guide for how to make a set list. So, you know, if we're in one town like Minneapolis, there's obviously a lot more variety that goes into play. But if you look at, like, the previous weekend when we were in Texas for three shows and in Fayetteville, Arkansas, I'll send all four of those out to basically to Brennan, Ryan, Jake, and I, so we can reference them. And then we'll make like a sheet with all four shows on it and try to split up songs that way so that we're really getting a good rotation of all the songs that we play in there. You know, we don't want to play, for instance, like Jajunk 3 years in a row in Austin. You know, people, as much as they like that song, it's like, okay, we heard this last time. So that sort of variety and diversity is really important to our fan base. And so that's something that we've started to pay more and more attention to as we create the set list. So we really go like week to week as far as that goes, and try not to repeat anything over a 3 or 4 show stretch, and then, you know, start with a clean slate the next week. And, you know, and that also really helps keep the variety going there very naturally too. So sometimes what we'll do if we're on in the middle of a tour, I'll create a list that has like the last 4 or the last 8 shows that we've played, so that we can see, okay, we haven't played this in the last 10 shows. We should probably try to get that in this week, and then, you know, compare those two different lists. So, yeah, we're kind of dorking out on our own music, but I think the end result of variety is a good thing.
Right. On that same note, do you guys ever like kind of abandon ship on a set list mid-show? Like, say you're feeling, you know, you lock into a jam and it starts heading, you know, a different direction. Is there spontaneous song inputs, or, you know, like you're building into this jam and it feels like it should go somewhere that the set list isn't going? Do you just kind of go with that and play?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. That happens all the time. The bottom line is that you know, the set list is really just a guideline or an outline. It's not set in stone for anything. So, you know, for instance, in Minneapolis the other night, Brennan just started singing When Doves Cry, the Prince tune.
Yeah.
That was something that just completely happened in the moment. And, you know, we weren't playing the exact chords of When Doves Cry, how that happens, but, you know, that didn't really matter. It was kind of, you know, it was our own little version of something that happens there. I mean, another instance that I remember is we were playing St. Petersburg a couple years ago, and we hadn't played there in a few years. And I'd written the set list for that night, and it ended up being a little more on the progressive side. And we walked out on stage and looked out in the audience, and it was like 50-50 dudes and girls. that is, as you know, if you've been to an upper show, that's a little bit atypical. We have a lot more guys that come to the shows than the women do. So we completely ditched what we had and went in a totally different direction and maybe played one or two songs that were on the original set list, but that's it. So, you know, that sort of thing will happen too if we're feeling like, okay, this crowd wants something else. So, you know, it just depends, night to night, kind of what's happening. And, you know, you never know if we end up like improvising something and it's a really heavy sort of jam and, you know, and we've already played a couple other things that are heavier. We might make a decision to, okay, let's do something that's a little bit dancier, a little bit easier on the ears. Just because, you know, we don't want to pound the same thing, song after song.
Right. Cool, man. Well, that's great insight. I got a couple more for you here, and then we'll let you go, Joel.
Okay.
Shifting gears a little bit to summer camp coming up here, and I guess we're under a month now. You guys are once again doing three nights with, you know, alongside your good pals Mo, and as well as the debut of God Boner with Gene Ween. Tell me a little bit about what to expect from that debut and what you guys have in store for another memorable summer camp.
Well, you know, summer camp is one of those things that really, the mood kind of makes itself there. You get the feeling that all these Midwesterners had been enduring tons of crappy weather all winter and they're just so amped to be outside and doing anything that's not inside. So that part is a little different than most festivals. I feel like you get that sort of wild, the end of cabin fever vibe, which you don't have with most other festivals. So so that's always a great time, and it really feels like a home festival for us. And as far as the God Boner meets Gene Ween, you know, we've always been big fans of Ween over the years, and much like many of their fans, were probably a little disappointed when we got news that they were breaking up or not performing anymore. And this idea came about. You know, we've done a number of collaborations over the years with different people. We did one with Huey Lewis a few years ago, where we played some of his songs, and then he had a new solo album out that was kind of a Memphis Staxy thing, and so we did a little tribute to that. And in this particular instance, you know, it was brought up to us that, you know, do you want to do some Ween songs with Aaron? And we thought, wow, this would be really cool if we could actually make this happen. And so we wanted also to make sure that it was cool with the rest of the guys in the band. So we reached out to, to Dave and to Mickey, the guys that we've interacted with a little bit in the past, and said, hey, you know, we were asked to do this, but we're only going to do it with your blessing. And they were cool with it. And so here we are. Yeah. So we're going to play some Ween music and maybe a cover. We'll see what happens with that. But yeah, it would be, you know, of course the other thing that would be really, really cool would be if this is sort of the bridge that maybe helped the Ween guys get back together and play some shows in the future. So, you know, maybe we can at least be that footnote.
That would be great. That would be great, man. Okay. Two more quick ones for you. At one point you guys were an up and coming band, you know, trying to make it for yourself. Now you guys have accomplished that. Who are some up and coming bands that you think people should look out for?
Well, we always try to take bands out on the road with us that we think are really outstanding musicians and good people, and so that's something that, you know, if you look at the last couple of years of support acts that we've had out with us on the road, you'll see a lot of our favorites on there. You know, this year we had a great time touring with Talk. Those guys have some great songs and some really funny personalities too. So we've had a lot of fun hanging out with them. big fan of the revivalists who also supported us for some shows. They may be a little beyond the up and coming. They're doing really well in their own right. So I really dig what they're doing. I would also say, the Nth Power is another one on our scene that is really, really written some great songs and has a great live show. Let's see if I can think of one more here.
I know you did a lot of touring with Dopapod.
Dopapod's great. I sit in with Turbo Suit once in a while. I love those guys.
Yeah.
So there really is a lot of good music that's kind of coming up the pipeline, and people that are writing great stuff and playing some great shows.
Cool, man. Great. All right. Well, last one for you here. We've seen you grow from a local South Bend band into a nationally renowned powerhouse jam band. What's next for Humphreys McGee? What does the future hold for you guys?
Well, we obviously love playing live concerts, so that's really the hallmark of what we do, and we plan to keep doing that and turn around the U.S. and maybe a little bit more international stuff. But, as we kind of touched on earlier, now that we have our own label, the sky's the limit as far as what we can really release, both, audio-wise and the DVD, Blu-ray, webcasting thing has obviously become a big thing too. So,
mm-hmm.
we definitely have a few surprises, coming as far as even the rest of 2015 goes. So, I think it's going to be another exciting year for the band. And, we're happy to be where we are and, plan on continuing to do it for as long as we can.
Great. Okay, well, you guys definitely deserve it. Joel, I want to thank you immensely for taking the time to sit down and talk with us. Some great insight into the world of Humphreys McGee. I appreciate your time, and we will catch you on the road this summer, my man.
Word. Thanks, Elliot. Right back at you, man.
All right. Thanks, Joel. You have a good day, man.
You too. Take care.
Take care.
See ya.